Welcome, everyone.
Eat that.
I remember to wait.
So welcome, everyone, to the May 23rd roundtable, and thank you for being here. And this is an important conversation, and I think I'll speak just as personally or as chair of the Board of County Commissioners. I am hopeful that any other department heads or separately elected officials recognize that this conversation is happening today. It's a super important conversation. And while we recognize that people have competing priorities about being here, we hope you take the time to listen and participate, because this was your opportunity to give feedback on this. And after this, when the board gets that feedback, we will expect everyone in our one island county to move forward and embrace this. So that's my stump speech for a moment, trying to be as nice as possible. We are going to be talking about the equity statement. And Michael, am I asking you to kick off, or is Kanisha just going to kick off?
Speak to it.
Okay.
Thank you. This equity statement was brought to the board at the work session, and the commissioners asked that we bring it to the roundtable in order to get input from department heads and elected officials. So we're just here today for input, here to take notes and just have a really good conversation around it.
Why don't you read it out loud?
Okay.
I'm sorry, can't help it. Can we stop at the end of each sentence or each paragraph and just make sure that we've got, we're good to go and we've got buy-in and agreement?
So read it and analyze at the same time, or do one read and then we go through?
I just I read really fast to get to the end, mm-hmm. and I just want to make sure that there's some reflection time on each statement so that there's comfort.
Okay, so that's what I'm asking. Yeah. Commissioner asked me to read it once.
Read it through and then read it.
And then we read it to analyze. Okay.
Good point.
So Island County's draft equity statement. Island County is committed to developing, nurturing, and sustaining an equitable workplace where everyone can thrive. We will continue to build an organization that values, supports, and embraces diversity while simultaneously fostering an inclusive workforce and community. We recognize that harmful practices have been reinforced in our society by structural and systemic forms of oppression. As we seek to dismantle these practices, we pledge to amplify the voices of underrepresented communities or those who were historically excluded by removing barriers that result from racial and social injustice and inequities. It is our goal for every employee and community member to feel they can thrive and are welcomed. We strive to remove barriers and address the root causes of inequities. We strive to create an inclusive environment by listening and engaging with our diverse communities. We will work to ensure that equity is the cornerstone of our policies, procedures, and practices. Our commitment to equity, diversity, and inclusion is unwavering.
Thank you. Now you want to just go through one sentence at a time and take feedback.
Okay. So Island County is committed to developing, nurturing, and sustaining an equitable workplace where everyone can thrive.
Yay. I see a big thumbs up. All right. I love the focus on thriving, because we're talking about communities that thrive. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We will continue to build an organization that values, supports, and embraces diversity while simultaneously fostering an inclusive workforce and community.
My only suggestion is will and say continue. We've actually started this process.
Okay. work.
I learned my words.
Any other thoughts about this section?
So is there, is it necessary, just tell me if it's maybe not, is it necessary to define inclusive? Is that a word everyone feels comfortable with, that they understand what that means?
I think so.
Can you, on the comma slash words after that, no, we went through this before, but I always think something.
You're talking about while simultaneously?
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. What is the need for that comma slash language versus just period, putting the period at the end of diversity? The words are different. So I know it means something different, but I don't know that I understand why we're, while simultaneously fostering inclusive workforce is, needs to be said if we're supporting and embracing diversity.
Because technically, you can look at it as two different things. You're supporting and embracing diversity, but fostering is actually the action and the doing of it.
Okay.
And just because we're diverse doesn't mean that we're inclusive.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that you're recognizing and embracing diversity, but you're also wanting to foster an inclusive environment.
Doesn't it also reach outside of the organization into the community?
Yes.
The second portion?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And what I meant, the doing of it is actually taking the actions so folks feel not only that they're in survival mode, but they're thriving. Well, looking at our practices, looking at our procedures, seeing how we can change culture and so folks will be able to feel safe while we're fostering diversity. So that's what I meant by the doing of it. So we are acknowledging this, we're going to build this, but we have to take actions towards it, because there's a lot of times we're like, let's have diversity. And the organization, the situation is not fostering. It's not healthy for a person with a diverse background, right? Whether it's neurodiversity or ethnicity or sexual orientation. So we have to do both.
So my aha when Catherine described we can be diverse without being inclusive was a little bit of an aha for me, because I thought, that's right. If you're thinking of that inclusivity as being welcoming and sort of affirming of everyone's welcome here and bring their whole selves into that, that's different than just saying we're going to check the box on diversity.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little aha for me, Kathy.
There's another thing that inclusive means for me, and that is, I've been hearing a word being used in these conversations lately, not here in this organization, but the word belonging, because there's people who do not identify as being part of a diverse population, and they're having a sense that maybe they don't belong. The word inclusive for me includes everybody. So whether you... you know, no matter how you identify, everyone is included in that for me.
Mm-hmm. In the trainings we've been doing, Kenesha, when she goes through and explains diversity, equity, inclusion, and what those concepts entail, she has added belonging. We had a long conversation about it because we're kind of a lifeline, that what Melanie was talking about is that inclusive includes everyone. And so if we're including everyone, everyone should feel that they belong. So belonging is kind of repetitive, a little bit of inclusion. So we both, in our conversations, kind of acknowledge that belonging has been thrown in there, but from our perspective, inclusion includes that, is part of that.
Yeah, just want to make sure everyone understands.
Yeah.
Now, because I was trying to eliminate words, but now I'm adding words. If you took that same sentence while simultaneously fostering an inclusive workforce and community, and then add where everyone belongs to the end of that sentence, does that clarify what that inclusivity means more? Okay. Not everybody's getting to belong.
Everyone does belong to.
And inclusion.
But my point was it took explanation, right? It just took conversation. And so if you were to pick this up and didn't have the advantage of that conversation, that's why I was asking.
So
I'm not trying to wordsmith, that's just why I was asking.
So I'll tell you my personal perspective. I think of the addition of belonging as the majority group that has always belonged.
Assimilation.
Needing to be recognized in this work instead of.
And you don't want them to be recognized in this work? You don't think that they, that might be important to them?
I think
it's a way of maintaining their majority status.
Or it could be a way of making sure that you're not pushed away from the table and feeling like you're being diminished so that other people can be included, which is how some people do interpret this.
Yeah.
So if you say, no, I'm not arguing, but I'm arguing for the sake of the argument.
Mm-hmm.
If you say everyone belongs equally, you can't feel marginalized either direction, right? Which I understand from a diversity and inclusion standpoint, you can't say, well, how in the world could you as a majority power structure feel marginalized? But that is the attitude that's partially keeping people from participating, right? And so it's like you're not getting less because somebody else is being included. They should have been included the whole time. But does belonging acknowledge that? Does it take away that feeling of I'm getting less from someone?
I think one way too of looking at how the belonging term came along, I think when DEI is mentioned or when that topic comes up, folks automatically, and I talk about this in the training a lot, folks automatically go to it's a race thing. Oh, here we go with the black and white thing, right? But once folks really understand what diversity, equity, and inclusion is, it's everyone. You have folks that have neurodiversities. You have folks with different ethnicities, yes. You have sexual orientations. You have folks that might need just even a screen over their computer because their eyes, and they need that equity piece. Like, okay, can I have? So once folks really understand and learn that it's not just a racial aspect of it, then folks understand, oh yeah, we all come to the table with something different. And we all need to see how we can, like I said, you're not trying to change someone's mind with this work. You're asking them to have an open mind. And when we all can come to the table with whatever we bring, whether it's religious, it's, you know, all our diversities, then everyone will feel like, okay, I belong here because everyone has something that's different, and acknowledging that rather than just take, because when folks take it from the race perspective only, they're like, okay, I don't belong in this conversation, right?
We all belong. It's we interesting. All, yeah. First name will come to me. Powell, James Powell says, it's the antithesis of othering. That belonging says we're all one, regardless of how we're entering here as a woman, as a whatever, and versus the othering is a way to push people out.
I think another way of possibly looking at it is that when we're talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion, we are talking about including everyone. And the goal with all of that is have an inclusive, diverse, equitable workforce. The result of that is belonging. And so I think that's kind of like, if you look at it, if you add belonging, you're adding the result instead of the process. And so that's, I think, kind of why.
Yeah, if you do, if you do the three things right, and simultaneously you will belong. And I think looking back in it too, if you go historically, the belonging piece, that might be folks that are trying to hold on to that melting pot idea. But when you look at it from a diversity, equity, and inclusion perspective, you see what everyone's bringing to the table and you welcome their differences rather than saying, let's just all get into this one thing and be this one thing, right? So you're able to see them for who they are and what they're bringing to the table, like I talk about in the training. So when we have differences or conflicts, we know and learn where we can understand where that person is coming from.
So could you tack on to the end if if by doing DEI and creating an inclusive workforce, our goal is to create a sense of belonging for everyone, could you tack on, while simultaneously fostering an inclusive workforce and creating a community of belonging for all?
No, we can't tack that on, and I like it, but we can't because we're not there. We don't agree. I mean, not that we all have to agree, but there's significant pushback at this table about that. So we can't.
So we're going to stay with this as is?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm saying that I can feel the body language of pushback, which means we're not, that's not ready.
And the other side too that folks look at with belonging is, and this is going the other side of it, if we want to break it down a little bit more, is like, who decides, who feel, you have folks that are coming to, we're keeping it in the workforce with different outside traumas. So even if you do DEI perfectly, because of what they're facing outside in life and whatever it is, they might not feel like they belong in a certain space, right? So then are you forcing them to belong? But you can do DEI very well, and you have folks with outside trauma that they just won't feel as if they're a part of whatever it is that they're coming in with, you know, being trauma-led, trauma-informed, they might not. So then it's like, is it the onus, you're putting it on the shoulder of the manager, supervisor's boss to kind of take on or try to see how they can make this person belong? Because you can do DEI, nothing's perfect, but you can do DEI to the T. And because of outside trauma, someone still doesn't feel like they belong, right? So I think that will take that pressure and that onus off once you actually know that as an organization, you're following, you're doing those three things together simultaneously.
I mean, that makes sense if I'm understanding. That makes sense a little bit to me that the belonging thing is really outside your control because it could be the person that experiences that they're not belonging. Like, I don't belong here. That could be internal to that person, not anything that you've done to create a environment that's not welcoming. It's just that person doesn't know how to walk through that door.
Exactly. An example too, to kind of break it down. So for example, when you talk about inclusion and you said, okay, let's bring everyone to the table, right? And you bring someone of a diverse background, whatever it is, neurodiversity, and they give a suggestion, right? And folks just ignore that suggestion. They can be at that table. Yes, you brought them there. You're trying to do inclusion checkbox wise, and they said something and you don't pay any attention. That's another way of saying, okay, I feel like I actually feel like I don't belong here because no one's listening, right? But then you can also listen to everything they're saying, be inclusive, do inclusive right at the table, and they just, one, feel like they don't belong. And we don't want to get into the psychology of it because you have imposter syndrome. You have all that stuff that folks go through, right? So just saying, yeah.
And I think you summed it up really well.
Yeah.
Is that diversity, equity, and inclusion are things that the organization can work on. Belonging is something that's personal to every person, to everyone. And so we, as an organization, we can't make people feel that they belong, but we can do the diversity, equity, and inclusion.
To create the environment.
Yeah.
So it's that people can feel belong.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the concern is that there are segments of the population that may feel, and I don't have the knowledge, but I understand the kind of restorative, you know, this need for DEI. But in the process, our ultimate goal is not to bump out anyone, but to include everyone and to help everyone feel like they can include, because you don't want any particular group excluded from this new and ideal table that we are trying to create to be at our best.
One thing I would say to that is, if you really look at everyone, no one's the same. right? So everyone, there's diversity everywhere. So that's where the word inclusive is. We include, we welcome everyone's differences. So there's no particular group of people that can say, I don't have anything that's different. We're exactly the same, so we don't fit in. So that's the whole idea, continue saying again, if you do inclusion right, if you do that part of it right, and diversity right, acknowledging folks for what they bring to the table. It might be religion. It might be something, sometimes it even gets down to hair color. Sometimes when folks are being really, picky in staff, in workplaces, right? So when you do that, everyone has something that's diverse about them. So when you do inclusion right and see everyone for what they bring to the table, different perspective, whether it's age, right? You're older, you might know more. You're younger, you might know more at the tech. How can we put these two together to create something new? So everyone has something that's diverse about them, but it's just folks just get stuck in that DEI is a race thing. It's an everybody thing. So if you look at and accept and have your lens with diversity as everyone brings something good to the table, that's how, and then you work on everyone being included.
We had a citizen once in citizen comments who was complaining because he went to get a permit in some department and the permit tech or the permit planner or whoever it was who was talking to him was a man and he was wearing a skirt. And the citizen just couldn't get past this. And he's laughing and he's looking around trying to see, if everyone else is going to laugh with him. And the commissioner said, we don't have a dress code that says who gets to wear skirts and who doesn't wear skirts. This is bigger than race or ethnicity. It is about everyone's particular way that we are. And what we're trying to do is state clearly that this is our culture, right? So if somebody comes to work and they're wearing a skirt and they're not the gender that people identify as people who wear skirts, we can say, this is our culture.
It's okay here.
It's okay.
We accept it here. You're welcome here.
Yeah.
A dress code though, that you have to dress appropriate for the job that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think part of the issue in that was that the individual was doing building inspection. But now if I were, I think that's right. But then also if I'm hearing what you're saying, it's not to say that Sarah and Linda and I, women of a certain age, Catherine, you can be my age. Connie, you're going to retire on me. So I'm putting you at a different age now. But you can't pull every single one at the table and say, well, we are white, college educated women, 50 and older. Are you older than 50 and older. We're all the same, right? And so that inclusion language isn't just saying, well, you look different, you believe different, you act different. It's really just saying you are different. What do you have the
accept it?
Offer the organization. So if I'm getting that, then I understand what you're saying.
Yep, that's it.
Next paragraph.
Well,
are you done?
Was Sarah ready to go? We got one thing on the agenda today, and it's important. So I want to make sure we were all in, because also we're the ambassadors of it. So if we don't understand it, nobody can sell it. So, or advocate for it, not sell, advocate for it.
I guess the only thing that I would add is that then it's incumbent upon us to help people understand how we are defining inclusion. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everyone.
You have this conversation. Mm-hmm. You brought with it all of your stereotypes with it, right? We didn't broaden it. We're assuming that there's a knowledge base of the word.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that actually makes me think of something that Kenesha's worked on and has provided to me, but we haven't really talked much about how to get it out there, how to circulate it, how to educate on it, or that kind of thing, what to do with it. It's a glossary of DEI terms. Right, so that people are helped in speaking the same language, helped in recognizing what is meant in those different areas. So,
The one that came from Chab from
Came from you guys?
Came from Chab, and I shared it with you.
Right,
I worked on it with everyone that was there in chat. Yeah, okay, we so do have one that
to the wrong place, but yeah, that's that was really helpful for me in seeing, well, here's how these words are used and what they mean in these circumstances, in this situation that we're addressing.
Yeah.
And that probably is a good thing for us to try to, you know, kind of get out into the workforce.
Yeah, just a little bit. The equity committee from CHAB that I was before hired here, contracted to work with, came up with the idea. And then I suggested that there be a column of how does this relate to Island County? So then there's a column there as well. So you have the word, a definition, how to use it, and how it relates to our county. So there, that's
right.
So yeah, worked on that for a while.
To follow up with for everyone who's gone to the training is to, you know, kind of
follow
up with that afterwards.
Once an email.
We should think about it, I guess, in any case, on how to get it out into the employee base.
In the training,
Just had one. I like the inclusive workforce language in particular. It seems a call to action, like as we're onboarding folks, to have them go through some type of training related to DEI, like the trainings you've hosted, or there are other sources out there, but it seems, I like that it's a bit of a call to action, what we can implement.
Okay, next sentence. Okay. We recognize that harmful practices have been reinforced in our society by structural and systemic forms of oppression.
I have a comment.
Mm-hmm.
I just rewrote the sentence to be in the present tense and just move the words around to say, we recognize that structural and systemic forms of oppression reinforce harmful practices in our society.
Oh, I like that.
Just to make it in the present tense rather than past tense. If that's...
I heard several folks go, ooh, I like that.
Is there any value in the past tense?
There is value in the past tense, the history of it, and mm-hmm. acknowledging where we're coming from, right, to be able to know where we're going. Mm-hmm. But saying it that way as well, also know that also acknowledges that it's still happening.
Right.
So if there's a way of acknowledging the past, because so we know where we're going, and I was like, hey, this is something we really got to be vigilant about and work on because it's still happening. I think that will tie in the next sentence as well. So
would you read your sentence again?
Yeah.
I just moved the words around and we took out two. We recognize that structural and systemic forms of oppression reinforce harmful practices in our society.
I like that too. And I appreciate the idea of recognizing the history of it. But for me, it's implicit, or I don't need to raise the historical aspect of it, because if it exists this way now, there's a history for it. There's a history of it. It's not like it just popped up the day that this was written. So I guess I'm comfortable with it not having a historic reference, but that's just me.
I hear you. And but I think our knowledge of our history, I'm thinking this out loud, so knowledge of our history hopefully assures that we don't repeat it. Awareness and knowledge of our history hopefully assures we don't repeat it. And I've got a personal stake in thinking about this, in that my children's grandfather is a Holocaust survivor. So assuring that we remember that epoch, that's the right word, that era of history, that time in our history, and what fomented and created that, helps us be aware to avoid
having that kind of history repeat itself. So I'm speaking from a very personal perspective in some ways, but that's just my reaction. I like what you're saying and I agree, I want to move forward, but that's just my reaction to what you said, Michael.
And can you add to the end, in the past, comma, and in the present? You know, so Susan to Linda's language, but then kind of an ending in the past and in the present. I don't know.
Yeah, I have another piece based on that, because even with the historical part of it, you have folks that say, oh, that was then, get over it. That's way back when, it's still not happening. But acknowledging that, hey, it's systemic and it's still happening, and it's, and even happening then, it actually formed and caused some of what's happening now. That's what it was built on, right? So I think having both, I just in my head, and maybe putting this, I don't know if it would be stronger language, but if you put harmful practices have been and still being reinforced.
And still continue to be.
Still being, still continue to be reinforced in our society, then you kind of have the past and present, but then it's so in the middle, it would be a lot right there. So that could, something like that maybe.
Yeah, you could also say, we recognize that structural and systemic forms of oppression have and continue to reinforce harmful practices in our society.
Yeah, and continue. I said like still that. Being. There you go.
Yeah, that's
simple. Yeah.
Usually lawyers get paid by the words. You're doing it the wrong way.
It's not. We have to reiterate that, everybody.
That's true.
I just think about generational trauma and the new research that's shown that generational trauma is actually gets coded and embedded in our DNA and passed on. And so this just harkens for me the importance of realizing that there is such a thing physically, medically, such a thing as generational trauma.
Yes, yes. I just checked to see, because I'm trying to track all that. So I have a lot of crosses here. I'm like, are you guys tracking? But the recording's there.
Yeah.
So I'll be able to get on that. So were we okay with the and continue? Mm-hmm.
That fixes your sentence issue, Linda.
But okay.
At Catherine's.
And continue, yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
I have no other changes. But.
Okay. As we seek to dismantle these practices, we pledge to amplify the voices of underrepresented communities or those who were historically excluded by removing barriers that result from racial and social injustice and inequities.
Right.
And those who were.
Yeah.
There's something missing here for me, and you've raised it in your words, which is this sentence doesn't recognize our inclusion of people with diverse abilities. It doesn't recognize that we have racial, gender, or other types of differences and inequities. So it isn't full enough for me.
The underrepresented communities, I think that covers it, but maybe if it's not that popping out, maybe you could list it somehow.
It did pop out for me. I hear what you're saying, but it didn't pop.
Maybe you could list it, but when you get into listing those racial,
I know, ages, well, who do you leave out?
Yeah. So any suggestions?
Mm-hmm.
Well, unless you're a great white man historically excluded. Just want to say.
But this speaks to, now here's where this sentence I think sounded different in the context of this, is we just had a robust conversation about inclusion, mm-hmm. and determined that all of the college educated white women sitting around this table are not the same. We just said that, right? And then we go into a sentence that talks about, and then there was the conversation about belonging, right? Where we were like, we want to make sure that nobody feels left out and that everybody belongs. And we had that conversation about what inclusion means, and it means seeing people for who they are and recognizing the value of each person and their differences. But then we call out certain groups of people and their differences as the values or the attributes that need to be amplified, or the voices that we want to have amplified. But that's a little bit speaks against our earlier conversation, which is every voice is deserving of equal amplification. That's what we're saying. But now we're unpacking and saying, but we have to make an extra effort here, right? But, so I've got a little tension between the earlier conversation and this sentence, because the reassurance that, you know, we gave to some people was your uniqueness will not be lost. But what we're saying here is your uniqueness may not be lost, but we're going to amplify these voices over yours.
It's so specific in this section that it kind of to me, it becomes obvious that there are things that are not included there.
Yeah, if you look at the structure of the statement, this middle part is where we're acknowledging historical context and acknowledging that it did happen, the original writing, and then as a county, acknowledging that it did happen, and this is what we are committing to do to ensure it doesn't happen again. And if we look at the truth in history, there are certain, the groups listed here, marginalized groups, are the ones in history that this has happened to. So while we're bringing everyone along, we're trying to make sure these things don't happen to this set of folks as we continue, right? That's how, if you look at the structure of it, you have the historical piece, we're acknowledging it, and we're making sure that, also acknowledging that these harms were done to underrepresented communities, marginalized folks, and this is how we're gonna make sure it doesn't continue.
You said acknowledge like 5 times, just that. But it's not acknowledged in that sentence. I think we need to say, as we seek to acknowledge and identify or identify these practices. It has to say that in there because
That's a good
we
point.
Assume that everyone knows, but I don't think they all do.
As we seek to acknowledge and dismantle these practices, because I think you're speaking of the awareness.
Right.
And it's almost as if your entire statement reads in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
Beginning with our intent and recognition, acknowledgement, and ending with intent.
And kind of going to that a little bit of what Commissioner Johnson was saying, by the way, I like what Ryan's addition was too, but what Commissioner Johnson was saying, the thing that I see there related to that is the idea of putting together people as a community rather than treating people individually. So I could see it saying we pledge to amplify the voices of those who have been unrepresented or those who were historically excluded, but rather than doing that thing of saying you're an unrepresented community, well, you know, putting people into a box or a group, assigning that to someone rather than letting them stand individually and place themselves where they believe they are, I guess. I'm not sure the right way to say that, but that's the one thing that I see there that does kind of that clumping people back together again.
Mm-hmm. I love the acknowledge piece, putting that in there. You guys know this is draft number 8, 9, 10. So there was acknowledge in there quite a bit. Cut it out. Okay. But I think when it says underrepresented communities and those who were historically excluded, I think that covers it. Like, if we just, sometimes we got to get to a point where just the truth of history, you have some folks that were historically excluded from that piece of it, because you see, as we go along, like Commissioner Sinclair said, it goes around as like a completion. But I think that those sentences tie with the acknowledging of the historical piece and how now is like, okay, this is how we, so you give the problem, right? And the other sentence is like, okay, this is how we're going to work towards this not happening again, the solution part.
What if we did who were historically excluded? So by that, you're addressing racial, you're addressing orientation, you're addressing females, nationality, historically excluded by removing barriers that result from injustice and inequity.
So taking out the social and racial?
Just a thought. Well,
the middle section, you know, the first section is about how we are saying we are including everyone. What the middle section is saying that historically and even today, we have these structural and systemic forms of oppression that we are rejecting.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's so I mean, I don't, we're rejecting those structural and systemic practices. Right.
And acknowledging that they exist.
I'm good with keeping racial and social injustice and inequities in there because the most egregious examples, the most painful examples, are that we continue to see. But I'm speaking as somebody who doesn't have, you know, these disabilities. I don't have those things.
I'm sorry, but I just got told last year that I don't have a right to make medical decisions about my own body. So you want to talk about social injustice and inequity, try being a woman in the United States. I didn't mean that to sound as harsh, but I mean, we're talking about racial and we're saying we're going to call out racial as the form of discrimination that still persists. I haven't seen a woman president. There's hardly any women CEOs. We don't get to make decisions about our own bodies and our medical practices. And I have to explain to Michael why he should make less money or the same amount of money as Connie if they were both county because he feels entitled to make more.
He does not, for the record, he does not.
Never,
Michael is very open. I'm just making a point.
But
you got me to where I need to be in terms of my original question. Because when I look at this and I think social injustice and inequities, and I think about Pride Month starts next week and what happened at Stonewall and why it happened and the imprisonment and beatings and the things that precluded Stonewall, that is a form of social injustice and horrific oppression. So these words, when we go in and we look at context, they apply to Jill's example of why am I fighting for the rights I won 40 years ago?
They weren't even ratified yet. So, like, we're saying racial injustice, and then we're saying
social injustice.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand. My tone sounds a little more intense than it probably mm-hmm. should. I don't understand the difference between gender and racial, to be honest. They're both visual differences. So I've had it explained to me the difference between orientation and racial, right? Is that your orientation isn't obviously known by people, so maybe it's different. What's the gender racial difference? What's the level of discrimination difference?
It's a form of social oppression.
It's all social injustice and oppression.
Some things. Mm-hmm. We're calling out and saying, we see this the most here. And I feel I get that. And I think there's ownership that needs to be taken of that. But I also think it's a false narrative to say that it is simply happening in racial situations or orientation situations. It is happening, and I've said it before, and I said it poorly and disrespectfully. It also happens in political situations that what the acknowledgement needs to be is that we historically have pushed people away, held down voices to benefit some people over others.
And
that I agree with.
Mm-hmm.
But just recognizing that it happened to to some populations or some individuals is not really fully acknowledging the truth.
I think what we're trying to say is it does say the word racial, and what you're explaining is social injustice. And I think the definition of social injustice probably needs, not in this equity statement, but social injustice is what does not come up against what some folks deem as normal, the social norm, right? And women, like you said, everything you listed, the woman, gender, all those things are social injustice because you have a group of folks who say this is how it should be and we're right.
How is gender so different than racial? In term, I don't feel like gender is a social injustice. I literally walk into rooms today, and there will be a former county commissioner, and they say, good to see you, commissioner. And this is what they say to me. You're doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
That is a discrimination based on who I am, the visual presentation of who I am. The fact that because I'm not a Navy wife, somehow I failed at being a woman. That's mm-hmm. the world I live in. But we're acknowledging the racial disparities, but not the gender disparities. Yeah.
But the gender disparities for me show up in the social injustice.
It's not social.
I think it's a definition.
It's a definition.
All of this is based in history. Right. And the reason you call out race separately from everything else is because of slavery. Right.
Women were slaves. What do you think marriage is?
I'm just telling you that. But if you study history, you have social and intellectual history are tied together. Race is included in social history.
Yeah.
Gender history is included in social history. LGBTQ history is included in social history. Political issues are included in intellectual history. Those things all tie historically. You could probably do just social injustice and inequities and be all inclusive of that group. It's just that we would have to add it to the definitions.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm more fine with that.
But I think it would be something where we want to add to those definitions. But I just know historically we've always dealt with race separately because of institutionalized slavery.
Yeah, and I think that is kind of in line with what I was going to say is you could, I think, by definition, you could take racial out of here because it is a form of social injustice. All of those things that you mentioned, basically, that was where I was going, is they're all forms of social injustice, but it's a matter, for me, it's a matter of significance or impact and in the historical context of slavery, there were a lot of other people who were treated poorly, but I can't think of too many who rise to the level of the way that African Americans were treated through slavery. You know,
it's not just redlining, Michael, it's the fact that I just want to be careful that from my perspective, it's not just something that happened in the 1700s. It is something that continued, you know, throughout history and continues today. And it kind of came out when we use the word structural, it was things like redlining and financial practices. It was zoning exclusions, which ironically in 2023, Washington state legislature just outlawed zoning exclusions in 2023.
And one thing I wanted to say too is when we hear the word racial, there's so much on Black and white. We had internment camps. We have Native Americans. We have, you know, Southeast Asians. There's a life. You look at different races. If you want to look at a percentage of the American population, when you define race as what it really is and group those folks together, which it is, but sometimes folks just automatically go to that resistance of Black people in slavery and they just want to be acknowledged. That's over, been over. But race it's not just Black. We have, if you really look at, there's several historical even when they had the Patriot Act and the Social Security Act, they made sure like Asians, they weren't included in that. So it's not only Black folks that weren't included, but the word racial just triggers like, oh, here goes Black people again. It's not just, we have more than two races, right? So to say racial, I think that in itself needs its own section along with racial injustice, social injustice, I mean, because and I'm not going to go back over the definition of social, getting into social injustice, but I think listing those two, we covered everyone and everything that we're trying to stand up against is not the term, that we're trying to include best practices of trying not to let it happen again.
So I hear you. And this isn't speaking against racial. It is literally speaking against the realization that I'm reading this. And I feel like the discrimination that I've experienced is not acknowledged the same as the discrimination that someone else might be experiencing.
So what term could we use that would acknowledge that part of it?
I mean, I'm now so hung up on the fact that we think that women haven't been enslaved, that they've been voting the entire time in this country, that we didn't just have the most discriminatory Supreme Court decision that targeted 51% of the population. That just happened in 2022.
That's not enslaved. Yeah, it is injustice.
From people who tell me I'm a bad person for saying what I just said, and that's perfectly acceptable. Mm-hmm. And then our inclusion thing is acknowledging race and social inequity. And I feel like social inequity is so broad that we're supposed to know that that means women, and that women are still okay. We're not okay, ladies.
Yeah, but two things I want to say is that is injustice. That is definitely injustice. And we as women, you know, take race out of it. We all ditto to all of that. But again, we're not getting into definitions, but that's not slavery. That is injustice. And one thing I see what you're saying is like, you don't see that here. We're saying at the table that is defined as social injustice. But what I'm asking you is what term, how, because in my head, I'm trying to run through my head, what term, what could we say that encompasses racial, gender and social injustice,
biological.
So what term could we use that would be seen? Because we can get into the nitty gritty of it. Like that's fine. You have,
I like biological.
You have women that are of different ethnicities. So what term can we use there? Right.
So, to that end, what I'm coming up with, or what I'm struggling with, is the idea that we start creating this long list. Right. And
that's why we were saying social covers it all, but Commissioner, you know, saying that maybe.
And so what I'm thinking is it could say by removing barriers that result from racial, gender, identity, and other social injustices and inequities. So, you know, for one, kind of saying and other is that, and not to other anyone, but to say that these are, you know, and other ones I haven't mentioned is the way that I mean that phrasing, and put in there some of those ones that are larger, like gender and identity is the one that I was thinking. It kind of is somewhat broad in my mind, and then leaving it at that, not trying to name off everyone, but recognizing there are other fairly large groups that are
there are. And so and again, like everybody, I don't want this to get into a big long list. And I appreciate that this, what you just said, Catherine. The reason I was thinking biological though has to do with neurodivergence, and has to do with other physical impediments that people have in the workplace. That's where biological was coming, and I'm not sure what you're just saying includes that. But again, I don't want us to do a big long list, so I'm gonna stop.
But then even with the biological part, is people are being judged and not accepted based on social norms, and then we get back in history of like, who created these social norms? Who are these social norms comforting? Right. So that's how. But then again, you're saying that's what social injustice is.
Right.
we don't fall into your box to make you feel comfortable and do what you want with us. So you push us away and put barriers in our way and no, you can't do this. No, you can't do that. You're not this. But then again, so that's social, where you get judged. Oh, that's not the norm. You don't fit in here. You don't, who decides that? Now we're getting into the nitty gritty of it. But like Michael said, racial, gender, identity, and social injustice. So, because I would just wouldn't put other. I just wouldn't put other.
That you word, guys can,
that
can,
word
can,
just makes yeah. me.
I know
what you're saying.
I had to say, I'm not othering.
Yeah, yeah. So and we, but we can't say that when someone click on it on the website and just start reading it, right? We won't be able to be there to say that.
I like, you know what I like about this? I like that it's a conversation and it's making us, it's forcing me to rethink, well, what do I have, you know, even the aha you guys had earlier. That's what I hope our equity statement is. I hope it's not something we all agree to and put on the shelf and post on our bulletin board. I hope it's a statement that somebody can walk into Tony's office and say, I don't get this. And Tony is forced into a conversation about it. Or Ryan has to explain, well, okay, so they walk into my office. How about okay. that? And or Ryan has to sort of explain it to a new employee. What does this mean? It becomes a conversation. And if I'm out of my depth and I'm going, wow, I feel like I'm not sure, I can say, Kanisha, can I involve you in this conversation? It's the start of a conversation.
And just on that, I think the training that done? We're doing
is that
the training that we're doing, it's kind of starting that. I think what you're saying is making sure as a county we have our goal or why, and we all have the same verbiage and coming from the same place. And we've had folks reaching out saying, well, this was eye-opening. Oh, I learned something. Oh, I do that. Thank you so much for, I'm going to change this, or I didn't notice that. So I think with that and doing the training together, it that will kind of happen.
I wanted to circle back on Ryan's acknowledgement statement because I was reading through that paragraph again, and the first sentence says we recognize, which is kind of like acknowledge. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's needed again in the second sentence. Just something to think about.
Where were you putting the word acknowledge?
As we seek to acknowledge and dismantle.
Beginning of the second, or kind of yeah. second sentence.
I think so. Wordsmithing, using it, saying it different ways might hit different folks.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
I know that there's a bigger injustice here, but you know, as women, if I'm correct, I'm not sure that the right for women to vote has even been ratified in the Constitution yet.
No, only in 32 states, right. 30 some states.
Right, so this is, and I would hate to see us make this incredible statement and move forward on it and 3 years from now say, gosh, we right. maybe should have included biological and gender. To
I think we decided to say result from racial, gender, identities, and social injustice. So we said we would add those.
Doesn't this? Just not editorial.
What?
Doesn't it make you want to go out and have, I mean, for me, remembering these things makes me feel like the ERA amendment, right?
Quality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. For years, I was screaming that one for years. And then it just faded away. But now it's coming back, so that's good.
And that's, I get what you're saying. And this is heavy. And some of the what some folks come up against, and even really good for Island County to have the statement is you have folks that some of us, we can, when we have the conversation, that heavy feeling comes up and then we go, but you have some folks that they're feeling this heavy 5 days out of a week because everywhere they go, they're reminded of something, right? And in this conversation, some of us are being reminded. So I think having this statement and sometimes folks just opening our website and seeing it, they're like, oh, you know, it kind of helps to lift that heaviness because some of us, we carry it. We can't put it down. Even when we try emotionally to put it down, someone out there is like just reminding you of who you are, who they see you as, I should say. So it's pretty heavy.
Now, are we adding those words because everybody's afraid to tell me no? Or are we adding those words because we think they're good words? Because sometimes people are afraid to tell me no because I got the tone.
I agree with you. Yeah, we're just teasing out social a little.
So when you spoke about not having, you know, the big government telling you you don't have the rights over your own body, it's like parroting what my wife says on at least every couple day basis because she continues to be so outraged all the time. So I really, you know, support that, and I think that's, you know, for me, it's not adding it because you said it, it's adding it because you reminded me that she would expect me to say it.
This is also a conversation underneath it. It's a conversation of who's had the privilege to design some of these systems and who hasn't, right? And I'm also aware in these conversations that it's very easy for me to talk because I have talking privilege and I've embraced it fully. And then people feel intimidated by that, which I don't understand because I would just tell me I'm an idiot and move on. But it's a real thing. So I also want to make sure that this isn't just deferment to titles, that this is like literally
power inequities,
peer-to-peer conversation. I just want to own the fact that I know that and I can be persuasive. It doesn't mean I'm right.
Mm-hmm. It's also really important because there are a lot of times that people forget, right? They're being involved in these conversations. There are times where people start listing and they leave gender out. They leave sex or gender, whichever you prefer. And it's like, I'm always constantly like, no, women are an underrepresented group. We are historically oppressed. You don't get to annihilate that just because we're now the majority of the population, right? We have had the right to vote in this country for just over 100 years. Those things are important. And so adding gender makes a lot of sense, at least for me, because I think people do forget that as an easy path.
Yeah.
Well, there are people that don't understand women couldn't have their own bank accounts
until the 1970s.
Yeah. Couldn't have a credit card. I mean,
that is worse to me than the Supreme Court decision right there. I need that credit card.
And forms of control. When you control someone's physical independence, financial independence, mm-hmm. You know, when you...
It's back to Bill's point.
Right. I mean, right. That's a form of
control. I don't enslave the word. But yeah.
I know. I think we will let... I think...
Yeah.
I would say from my perspective, thank you for staying the course on it. I'll be sure and let you know when I don't agree.
I know, but it's okay. I don't. Yes.
And another thing, Commissioner Johnson, is if you want to look at the technical term of it, we're diving into intersectionality, right? Which is, what about the Black woman, the Asian woman? So you have that to deal. You have, those are two things.
Right.
Right. What about, so womanism. That, yeah. So listing those, you're actually getting into intersectionalities and there are folks that show up with 3, 4, 5, 6 things. If you want to use the word, not, I wouldn't say against them, but intersectionalities that they're a part of, they might be neurodiverse, a person of color with, you know, different gender orientation with, so there's a lot. And that's the thing too about the belonging piece again, and being trauma informed and being inclusive and seeing everyone for what they bring to the table. So with adding those, I think that's good.
Next sentence maybe?
Go for it.
Oh, yeah? Okay. It is our goal for every employee and community member to feel they can thrive and are welcomed.
Question. What do we mean by community member in that particular sentence? from the employee?
We serve the community as Island County. So anyone that's not employed by us, sometimes you have folks that kind of come to a desk, get services. The Thrive piece of it for community members, sometimes community members feel as if they're just constantly in survival mode. That goes a lot too with even human services and the services we provide to the community members, right? Doing that equitably so folks in the community can feel like, okay, I'm not just in survival mode right now. I can thrive. I can change. I can, you know, do better for myself and so on.
I understand. I was just trying to determine whether or not we were trying to identify many communities within the county government.
No, everyone, yeah.
The way that I try to think of that is people who live, work, do business, are visiting, you know, anyone who is physically here,
mm-hmm.
they're part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
An example speaks to the email I got this week challenging me on all of our meetings being during the workday while working folks can't show up. Just not that easy.
This sentence kind of brings back the belonging part to me, but I think, and I know it's not quite the same, because to thrive and our welcome isn't the same as belonging, because those are sort of thrive is an internal thing, welcomed is an outside thing, but it nods to that comment from the prior sentence that we were struggling with. For me, this sentence kind of covers that. It's talking about wanting people to feel they belong.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of think of the same thing. Is our goal for every employee, citizen, and community member?
Yes.
To have that. To feel they can thrive, are welcome, and belong. We can throw that in there too. It is our goal for every employee, citizen, and community member to feel they can thrive, are welcome, and belong.
What if they are residents and not citizens?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I like the rest of that, but that's been thrown out at me a number of times. It's when you say citizen, you're othering people who are not citizens.
It's a resident.
So by saying community member, mm-hmm. I think
so
you
we
grab
have,
all
we
that.
Have spouses often, especially being in the military community, that may have married when their spouses are deceased, they may not yet. And we choose not to be citizens. We have, I know, known folks who have been married to someone for 4 years that are still chose not to because they didn't want to give that up. So I just stay away from that word for a variety of reasons.
But I like employee and community. Yeah.
I think that's important because it points out that this is not just an internal thing.
We just had this conversation to go with.
But can you restate what you said at the end there, Ryan? The phrase.
Yeah, I was. That sounded like something was.
Okay. Community members feel they can thrive, are welcome, and
belong. That's really important.
Now I like that, but I thought what we talked about earlier is that we couldn't tell somebody how to feel, and that belonging is self-generated response.
Well, it's our goal. It's our goal.
Feel that way.
Our goal.
How about if you took out the word feel and said it is our goal for every employee, et cetera, to have a place where they can thrive, are welcomed, and belong? Because you're right. I mean, 20 years of marital therapy taught me I don't get to control how other people feel.
I know, that's why with that part, it says they can feel. I would say, because if we say everyone, that's a goal we can't attain. If we want everyone, it's our goal that everyone, so we won't really necessarily meet that goal. But I think when you say that someone can feel, because even in the community, you have folks that have maybe drug challenges and they can say to themselves, man, this place has so much support. If I just get myself together, I can thrive. So they feel that they can thrive even though they're not doing it at the moment. But if we just say it's our goal for everyone to thrive, we won't really meet that goal, I don't think. So it's like setting an attainable goal that folks can feel that they, and I like just adding thrive, welcome, and belong there. Belong can definitely go there because that's a that's definitely a part of it. But I think
I just reacted to the word feel, because it really is part of, so this is going back historically, where the word, how you manage people's feelings versus how you create space so they can have a place where they thrive there. And it's also, I don't want them to just feel like they can thrive. I want them to thrive.
So we can, so members of the community can.
No,
they can.
I'm reacting to this. One, I don't want you to just feel like you can do it. I actually want you to thrive.
Cross it off.
Right, but maybe you can't control the outcome if you can create the environment where they feel like it's a possibility.
That was the word in space, right? Yeah.
Like the feel, but we can't make you thrive,
yeah.
Right? Like Linda's programs can't make you come off the drugs. If you feel like there's an opportunity out there for you to take advantage of, we've done our part. But the person actually has to do their own work.
And I'm not hard over on this. If if her programs are creating the space for people to make different choices and where they can thrive, where they're welcome, that's fine. This is not where I'm not hard over on that four-letter word there. Mm-hmm. If I were asked to define it and somebody would say, ask me, I would say we're trying to create the space where people can thrive, where people can be welcome, where people can have a voice, where people can be included, where people belong. So I'm not hard over on the word.
There's a lot here too, because either way, thank you for kind of saying what is in my head. There's a parable in my culture that says, and maybe other cultures, but it says you can bring the donkey or the horse to the water, but you can't force them to drink it, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what you're saying. We provide it, we want them to feel that, but then they personally have to do that inner work as well to be able to do that. But that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is feeling as if they can thrive. It goes into housing, it goes into salary, it goes into a lot of different fields, like, you know, so it covers quite a bit, but.
Janet was saying have a place. I rather than have a place,
space.
I think in Island County, it's every employee and community member in Island County. That's the space, right? I bring who we are back into this paragraph.
Are we in this group? Are we overthinking it? And is this group? I'm good at overthinking, by the way. Is this group comfortable with feel because it's crisp?
Feels good for me. Feel.
Yes. Okay. Ignore me. I won't feel unincluded.
But we're putting in Ryan's belonging.
Belong at the end and belong. Yeah. And we could. Do we want so the suggestion of it is our goal for every employee, resident, and community member, or every what Commissioner Bacon said, for every employee, community member in Island County.
I think we're getting to
it. Okay. So just the original, it is our goal for every employee and community member to feel they can thrive, welcome, and belong. Or we word it properly, but
yeah,
thrive.
I'm jumping ahead to the last sentence here, not to skip the others, but I like the idea of bringing Island County back into it. So I would suggest the last sentence could say Island County's commitment to equity, diversity, and inclusion.
That's
our.
Yeah.
Say Island County. Just like put it back in the county, back in the statement when someone closes it out.
Thank you.
Okay, next sentence, we'll get to that one. We strive to remove barriers and address the root causes of inequities. I think we really discussed that part. Yep.
Nodding.
Okay. We strive to create an inclusive environment by listening and engaging with our diverse communities.
I like it.
Yeah. Did you have a thought? I saw you look up.
Just maybe if we can call it employees and community members, if it, we should also
talking about staff.
Listen and engage with our diverse staff.
With our employees and diverse communities like that.
We're our diverse employees and communities.
Diverse. Okay, bring it back in.
Wait, where did we put it? Because I might have a
diverse employees and communities.
Right. So
I know
that
what she's
makes
going.
It sound like we're only listening to certain
employees.
But that was our
for diverse communities.
Our employees.
We'll listen to
Sean, did that mess you up?
Good on that. Okay. We will work to ensure that equity is the cornerstone of our policies, procedures, and practices.
It goes back to what Catherine said earlier. I removed the word will.
Yeah. We
were.
Okay.
And I would change the cornerstone to a cornerstone.
I was going to say the same thing. Because I think a lot of people. Well, you said that more than one, and a lot of and to anyone trying to sort of defend this and explain it, it's like, so this is more important than when you say that, when it the cornerstone. So won't you tell me this is more important than financial solvency?
Well, there are four cornerstones to a building unless it's octagonal.
Okay, so okay, Island County's commitment to equity, diversity, and inclusion is unwavering.
Yeah.
Yes. I just want to say out loud the second to the last sentence, Michael. What that means to me is that we go into budget and work planning, that as we standardize how we're doing that, that everyone will be able to speak to somewhere in their document how this reflects these lenses that we're talking about in how we do things. If our policies, procedures, and practices include this, then let's be overt about it and make sure that it's in our budget planning and it's in our work planning.
And that's why I think it's really important that it is a cornerstone.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's the cornerstone.
I'm going to pick Ryan as an example. It's challenging for him to demonstrate equity in his budget, because his budget is providing buildings that people use, whether they're diverse or not, or equitable or not.
Now, I don't know.
For him to not include an ADA ramp in a project, that would be a problem. Mm-hmm. But it's more difficult, I think, to build things, to think some things than others. But
we'll have that conversation when Ryan comes forward.
Mm-hmm. I can't. I'm sorry.
No.
Now there's a couple sentences in here where we say we'll remove barriers and address root causes, but it doesn't say anything about providing opportunity. So, sorry, I hate to go back to this, but we try to create an inclusive environment by listening, provide opportunity for, and engaging with our diverse community. That's just something I saw there. So we don't. Okay, we can address it, but if we're not providing opportunities for our communities,
No, that makes sense. But see, when writing this in my eye, I looked at that as the Can Thrive piece, but naming it, because like you said, folks might not catch on to it. That
there's just a couple opportunities in this where we can say that we're not only addressing it, but we're actually providing opportunities for these people to thrive.
I'll try to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just jotting down providing opportunity to see where I can put it in. Yeah. Catherine's looking at me until we're going to be back in the office trying to. But I think that's a valid point, just seeing how, where we can put it. It's through. In my lens, I saw that in the thriving piece, right? And then if you want to get, we don't want to get too deep into it, but providing opportunities can even be of equal employment, all those things can be in that as well. So, yeah.
Pathways,
Mm-hmm. Or don't be sorry. It's good. Oh, well, you could be sorry about that. Don't be sorry about your good idea.
Are we in this room feeling like this is a go forward? And if you're not in the room, any thoughts about, I mean, I'm.
Can you show us, are there other people on? Yeah, so in any other parties,
bring it forward,
you can say, well, you weren't there.
Exactly. We could, that is one approach.
We're not going to be inclusive of the fact they weren't allowed to be. Well, they were invited, but they weren't invited. At the table.
I'm debating on saying something. This work grows out of a desire to address disproportionality and how people are misrepresented, underrepresented, overrepresented in certain places. Infant mortality. And one of the areas where we have significant disproportionality concerns is in law and justice. So I'm going to just express my concerns that there was no one in this room from law and justice, and I'll leave it there.
I think in fairness to law and justice, their schedules make it a little, and mandates make it a little harder for them to get away.
Yeah, they're in trials right now.
So I don't think it's an intentional snubbing of the process. And I think it's easy for us to do some outreach to make sure that they've read the edited document and had an opportunity to give feedback. I think that would probably be worthwhile to just do some additional, hey, we want to make sure that you're on board.
I think the outreach, and we want to, you know, we had this conversation, Kanisha, I'm assuming you've had outreach to our law and justice. If there's significant disagreement with this, are we willing to bring it back again here?
That's what I was going to ask about next steps. So rewriting what was said here, and maybe, you know, what Commissioner Johnson is saying, then saying, hey, this is what came out of the roundtable in an email. What do you suggest? But then what you were saying is if we get in the email big, like this whole thing needs rewording, do we come back to the roundtable? Is it something Michael and I, including Catherine, can make a decision on and send back out? So yeah, both things.
I appreciate the email as a heads up, but Kanisha, my feeling is this is too important to just do an email, and that you see if you can reach out to these separately elected officials and just sit down with them, get a half an hour. Okay. And if they say no, we can't, that's fine. But that there's a difference in how we talk.
And my approach to that was a little different. I was going to tell Kanisha, I don't want to ask, what do you suggest? I'd rather have a conversation with them. Don't want to get a bunch of disparate edits from other people, right? Disconnected edits from each other. So we can work out and offer to meet with them.
That's what I
mean. But you know, as you know, I can't make anyone with us. No. I did want to say though,
you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink.
I won't go there. I did want to point out that.
And I apologize Judge Skinner, if I.
I can't remember the other clip. Did point out that their schedules conflicted with the DEI training, but that they were going to try to tag team and attend. So they were reaching out.
And Judge Skinner's in a trial right now.
Judge Cliff actually came to half of the half day training.
And Judge Skinner was in a trial today, so that's fair.
But one thing,
let me finish,
please. Yeah.
And the prosecuting attorney, he also did reach out to Kanisha and I and let us know that they are required to go through a bunch of continuing education related to diversity training, so that he was not going to make it mandatory for his staff, but they, of course, can participate. We also we're going to be offering that, you know, we're happy to have, you know, Kanisha could be available for short sessions with them on specific topics and things like that. So there's not I don't want them not being here to be like,
there
an absence of any involvement or recognition.
I want to acknowledge my gratitude and to learn that that is a requirement of the prosecuting attorney's office that they attend DEI trainings.
Yeah, it's one of their continuing education things, yeah, apparently.
That's great.
The sheriff's office too.
Okay, good. Good.
But one thing I would like to ask with that is, could we put this outreach, could we put a timeline on it? Because even with work like this, we don't want it to be.
We're trying to get something done in government.
Yes. Okay, so we're not just waiting on these folks.
And, no.
Okay.
And I just, my only ask is to not do it by email.
Okay.
To do it.
A letter?
It's about just having a conversation with people.
It's an old-fashioned thing.
Yeah.
Just as an observation, I've sat around these roundtable tables for 11 years. Some of you have sat around these roundtable tables longer than that. And in this, of course, every time I say something, I start to get sensitive because of who's in the room, right? What if I say something that offends that person? What if I didn't include that person? What if I, you know, left somebody out? If you look around this table of people right now, there is a fair amount of diversity here compared to what I was experiencing even 10 years ago. It is a pretty inclusive organization. There are different generations, there are different races, there are different genders, there's different orientations, there's different religion, there's different political views. I mean, there's a fair amount of difference around this table. And we just went through a really difficult conversation pretty well. I don't know. I just think it's worth the shout out.
Thank you. Does anyone have anything extraordinarily pressing in the around the table part of this? Thank you for bringing your whole selves here today.
Great job. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
I have a meeting with
Can we leave?
Yeah.
I only have 30 minutes.